Welcome, everybody, to the 65th episode of the Jewish Drinking Show. I'm your host, Rabbi Drew Kaplan, and I'm very excited to welcome back second-time guest, Rabbi Chaim Lifvin. Rabbi Lifvin, welcome back.
Hey, thank you. Always good to be here.
My pleasure. So for those less familiar with Rabbi Lifvin here, he is a Chabad rabbi based out of Louisville, Kentucky. And before you think I misspoke that, most people out there listening would say, don't you mean Louisville or, I don't know, even Louisville? No, Louisville, right?
That's right. Nailed it.
Louisville. All right. So Rabbi Lifvin here provides kosher supervision to distilleries in Kentucky and received the moniker Bourbon Rabbi from a Wall Street Journal article a few years back. He also, and this is a big claim to fame here, he also previously appeared on episode 52 of the Jewish Drinking Show, in which we discussed providing kosher supervision to distilleries in Kentucky. So before we continue, we're talking a lot about bourbon. So Rabbi Lifvin, what are you drinking this evening?
I'm drinking my newest release, the first bourbon under my label. We'll talk a little bit about that a little later.
We will. It's a good tease. It's a good tease for people to stay tuned.
Hear more about what's in this cup. Stay tuned.
That's right. And I'm drinking a double oak from Woodford Reserve.
Oh, it's a great pour.
Yes. All right. Well, L'chaim.
L'chaim.
All righty. So I'm very excited to take a deeper dive into one of the topics we discussed on episode 52, which is distilleries selling their chametz. So more specifically, and for those out there, this is the fourth in a four-part series leading up to Passover this year. So this is the fourth Passover episode. Feel free to check out the previous three episodes. Some distilleries in Kentucky are, believe it or not, owned by Jews. Many of you listeners might not know this, but some Jews are actually involved in the bourbon trade in Kentucky. And so one of the significant issues that arises is really the issue of, what about Jewishly owned distilleries possessing these grains, this chametz on the duration of Passover? Rabbi Lifvin, how widespread is this issue amongst Kentucky distilleries? How many of them are necessarily Jewishly owned?
There's probably about four or five that are actually Jewish owned, but it's really more than just the amount that's owned by Jews. And it's really more than just that four or five. And the reason basically is, A, you have a company, for example, like Heaven Hill, which is owned by Jews. But that's not just one brand. That's tens, if not hundreds, of brands. They make over 3,000 products. So it's a huge array of items that this issue affects. Mm-hmm. And then aside from that, which is inside, so you have, you know, one company, Heaven Hill, which makes all those products. What about the barrels that they sell on the open market to other brands, mm-hmm. like Barrel Bourbon? Is a brand that doesn't actually distill, right? They buy from other places. So where are they sourcing? If that comes from a Jewish-owned distillery, then that brand could have an issue with, you know, with those products. Mm-hmm. A lot of people source from Barton, which is Jewish-owned, which doesn't take care of the chametz issue. So that issue is really more widespread than just the actual amount of distilleries owned by Jews. And each bottle needs to be looked into to make sure that that where that product came from, to make sure it doesn't affect the end product.
Okay, so how many of the, so there's, I mean, it sounds like there are thousands of products out there that are Jewishly owned, ultimately, right? Even if the number of distilleries is only a handful, essentially.
Right.
Okay.
Right, because I mean, inside Heaven Hill, for example, you have Evan Williams, Elijah Craig, Larceny, William Heaven Hill. And you just go on and on. That's off the top of my head, that's four brands from one distillery.
Yeah.
Two of the three biggest distilleries are owned by Jews. Hmm. One does do the chametz, one doesn't. Uh-huh. Jim Beam is the third, which is the biggest.
Really?
Not Jewish owned.
Oh, okay.
So the three biggest distilleries in Kentucky are Jim Beam, Heaven Hill, and Buffalo Trace Sazerac Family, that brand. So Jim Beam is the largest. The next two are both owned by Jews. And a lot of what Buffalo Trace, the the entire company at Buffalo Trace, which is owned by the Golden family, a lot of the bourbon that's sourced from Kentucky comes from there, if not the majority. Mm-hmm.
Although I will point out to listeners that last year, Buffalo Trace did release three labels of Buffalo Trace that was specifically under the Hushkacha of the CRC.
It was CRC, kosher, correct. Right? Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So they did do a special
rye, a weeded bourbon.
Yeah.
Their weeded recipe. Mm-hmm. And their standard bourbon recipe.
Yeah. Right. Although so that leads us into our topic, because they did a special process through the CRC to enable their whiskeys to be okay regarding Passover concerns.
And that's a 7-year product. So that, mm-hmm. that relationship with the CRC is almost a decade old.
Wow.
And it only involved the barrels for that production.
Yeah.
And they're set to release it again this year as well in a couple of weeks. Right after Pesach, they're going to do the same three again.
Oh, cool. I think, if I heard correctly, I think they had set aside initially like 1,000 barrels or some huge number initially. But yeah, last year they did a little bit for the first time after Passover. And yeah, they're going to do that.
Right, yeah. So the plan, from what I understand, is that every year, right around the end of Passover, I mean, last year they actually released it on Pesach.
Oh,
marketing issue, I guess they had there. Yeah. But yeah, so the right after Pesach is when they plan on releasing this each year.
Hmm.
And very it's neat. Part of their system now.
Very neat, very neat. Okay, so moving on to the topic of selling chametz on Passover, I just want to say that one of the most fascinating aspects when it comes to chametz on Passover is that around the turn of the 17th century, Rabbi Yoel Sirkis permitted Jews to sell their whiskey for Passover, since it was so financially significant to them, which then led to other foods and beverages to be sold for Passover, as is commonly done nowadays. And listeners out there, for those interested further on in this topic, you can check out the 24th episode of the Jewish Drinking Show on how whiskey became the catalyst for the selling of chametz, featuring Professor Joshua Cole. So fortunately, Rabbi Litvin, due to the aforementioned selling mechanism that was introduced around the turn of the 17th century, how many Jewishly owned distilleries, I guess we started talking about this, some of them are selling their chametz. So is there, like, do you know of a list, and is there a list of Jewishly owned distilleries that sell their chametz and or products? And also, how involved are you with that process?
So it's, there's, I don't know of any actual list, but okay. Like I said, there's only like 4 or 5. So you have Buffalo Trace, which we discussed earlier, mm-hmm. which sells the portion for the product they release after Pesach every year.
Yep.
You have Heaven Hill, who's been doing this for over 3 decades. You have New Rift Distillery, which sold their chametz every year for many years and apparently forgot last year, somehow, some way. I did email them last week to remind them.
Ooh, okay.
They do that sale. I actually don't take part in that. That's done with a rabbi in Cincinnati,
mm-hmm.
and sent it to a friend I have that works there. Just remind them, let's not let this slip again.
Thank you for that. As a Cincinnatian, I appreciate that push.
And if you see Rabbi Weinreb, maybe have him send them an email. It shouldn't be looked over again.
Yeah.
It'd be good to have more available products out there. So So I was in touch with them this week.
Great.
Then you have another company owned by, so then the next company that comes to mind is actually a little more complicated because it's in the process of being sold. So you have the Lux Co. brand is owned by the Lux family, which is Jewish.
Okay.
MGP, which is one of the largest producers of alcohol in the country, and probably the largest source of barrels. So he said, I said earlier, it may sound like a contradiction, they're in Indiana. So the largest source for barrels in Kentucky is probably Barton's, but in the country, it's probably MGP.
Wow.
So MGP is in the process of buying them.
They are Kentucky adjacent.
Right. They're just, I mean, they're from the, they're about 10 minutes from the Cincinnati airport, which is in Kentucky.
Right.
It's part of that tri-state area. Yeah. Covington, Cincinnati, and Lawrenceburg are all real close, and they're in Lawrenceburg, Indiana.
Yeah.
So MGP is in the process of buying them. Part of that deal is that the Lux family ends up with 2 seats on the board and 5 million shares.
Hmm.
So I don't know what the details of how many shares there are and how much of an interest they have in the company. If you own stock in General Mills and you don't sell your stock over Pesach, it doesn't make General Mills Chamech Avrilov.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I'm not paskening, but just the issue now with that company is A, their old stock, which hadn't been sold over previous years.
Uh-huh.
And going forward, what happens if is his interest in the company enough to affect it?
Hmm.
And if it is, that sale will be taken care of. I'm actually the mashgiach for MGP.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not under my own hashkacha,
yeah.
But I'm the one that actually visits the plant.
Oh, wow.
And we discussed this with them last time I was there a couple weeks ago. And it will be taken care of. The sale will not have gone through by the end, by Pesach, so it's not an issue for this year.
Uh-huh.
But if he has enough of an interest, then it will be sold. Otherwise, it'll just be owned by a non-Jew, so it is an issue.
Yeah. How often do you go to MGP?
Could be 4 to 6 times a year, unless there's something specific happening.
Mm-hmm. I know this is off topic of chametz, but on topic of whiskey, which is, what are you looking for? What is it that you're, anything in particular?
So it varies by distillery, it varies by size, and it varies by what they do. So if you have a company like Peerless Bourbon is one of the Peerless Distilling Company is one of the hashkachas that I do.
Mm-hmm.
They make a rye whiskey and a bourbon. And that's it. They have no flavors. The ingredients they have in their facility, they bring in water, rye, corn, and barley, and yeast.
Wow.
That's it. So I don't need to be there often. There isn't much for them to mess up.
Right.
And I mean, they it's one of the cleanest facilities I've ever been in across the board. And wow. I do a lot of stuff on other things besides bourbon.
Hmm.
Everything there, the detail, if anyone has been to the distillery, you'll know exactly what I mean. But the attention to detail that they take there is incredible.
Hmm.
Then on the other hand, if you go to a company that I certify as well, Heaven Hill. So now you're talking about thousands of products. They have over 30 different flavors of vodka.
Wow.
They have brandies, which are non-kosher, wine, cognacs. So now there's a lot more going on. A lot more oversight needs to happen to make sure all the flavors coming in are kosher. If they're not kosher, is the separation being maintained? Koshering tanks, making sure everything kept the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
They also have more than one facility, so they're trucking things in. Are those trucks kosher? So there's a lot more oversight in a place like that. MGP has very few flavors. They make other things besides bourbon and rye.
Okay.
They have some gins that they make with some flavors.
Mm-hmm.
But everything they make, everything that's in that facility is kosher. Mm-hmm. So they don't have, they don't have cognacs and brandies and stuff like some of the other ones do. So it doesn't need too much oversight, but we do spot checks and just we come in whenever. And they're a great company.
That's awesome. That's really neat. So, okay. Now you mentioned Heaven Hill for the last few decades, right? They've been selling their chametz. Do you have any insights how that process began?
Yes, I was but a child. So I didn't personally have anything to do with it.
But you know the person who does.
So I know people involved.
Okay.
I know a guy. So what actually happened there was Kedem was actually looking into putting out a bourbon, and they were looking into Heaven Hill.
Wow.
Okay. a brand. I think it was Old Williamsburg.
Okay.
Or something, was something they were involved with.
Uh-huh.
And they have a few different hashkachas. Still, I mean, to this day, this was that back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
One of the hashkachas, it was one of the Chassidisher ones, said, you know, what about this issue? Like, we got to, you know, look into this. So they did whatever, you know, when someone needs something in a far off place, they call the local Chabad guy, which was my father.
Uh-huh.
He was familiar with the Shapira family, mm-hmm. and they were very interested and eager. They didn't really know much about it before that,
mm-hmm.
But they did the sale then and have done so every year since then. Yeah, that's how it came about.
That's really great. So your father, as the head Chabad rabbi in Louisville, has been involved for the last few decades with helping them sell their chametz for Pesach.
Yeah, so my father's been in Kentucky since 85.
Mm-hmm.
I was born here.
Yep.
So yeah, he's the head Chabad rabbi of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And we have two other Chabads around the state. But yeah, so he's been involved with them for over 30 years.
That's wonderful. That's really cool. So, and have you been yourself involved with helping or directly facilitating the sale of chametz for any of these distilleries?
Yeah, so I've been at that sale for the last 10 years. Last year, it was a little complicated. We didn't forget to do it, but it was a little more mailing and virtual discussion.
Yeah.
As opposed to the normal around the board table.
Yeah.
So it's actually interesting with a company that large, and they're growing all the time. Mm-hmm. So we have the documents from last year, but they could have purchased, you know, two more Rick houses.
Mm.
So those addresses need to be added to be included. So, you know, they opened up a facility in Cox Creeks a few years ago, which is about 30 minutes from their big distillery or their big facility in Bardstown. So that gets added, and all their other Rick houses, and their distillery in Louisville, and they have all these other locations. So the actual sale form is similar to what most people fill out with their rabbi. They just have a lot more addresses listed on it.
Yeah. And they're, it sounds like they've been used to it with Heaven Hill for the last few decades through your father.
Yeah.
And have you gotten any other distilleries on board? Like you and or your father in that time?
So no, actually, the only one we reached out to the Lux family and to no avail.
Mm-hmm.
New Riff is another one that's owned by Jews, like we said before. They've been taking care of it for a long time.
Yeah.
The owner of New Riff actually used to own a chain of liquor stores. You're not legally allowed to own a liquor store and a distillery. Right. They're afraid of bootlegging.
Tide House laws, right?
Right. So but when he had the store, he was selling it as well to Rabbi Weinreb in Cincinnati. Oh,
yeah.
And so he was familiar with the process before he even had a distillery and continued it then,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately for last year, but
yeah,
we weren't looking to step in on anyone's toe. It was being taken care of, for many years. That was good. And, the CRC has been dealing with Barton and the Sazerac family for a long time. Why they don't want to get on board fully is beyond me. They obviously understand the value somewhat, because they're actually putting out dedicating lines and time and the facilities to make that happen for those three. I don't know how much harder would it be to do all of it?
Yeah.
I don't really understand that. Mm-hmm.
Have you reached out to any others and they've said no, or is it mostly that Lux, the MGP?
So, MGP is not Jewish owned.
I'm sorry. Which one was the Lux
going
one?
To own Lux?
Which one was the other Lux family?
Lux Co.
Oh, Lux Co. Okay.
Yeah. But the thing is, Lux Co, again, they're not as big as a Jim Beam or a Heaven Hill, but they're not a very small facility either. They own a few brands. They own tequilas in Mexico that are made in Mexico. They own another whole facility called Limestone. They don't own it fully, but they own a good portion of it, which puts brings this issue to that distillery as well.
I was curious, like I didn't know before going to this conversation that there is such a consolidation of the distilleries amongst all the different brands. Like I was in my head that there were like so many different ones out there because of all the different brands, but as you mentioned, they're fairly consolidated.
Right. So there are a few other brands. There's a brand called Lusty Claw. It's okay. Not a very large brand. It's got a really cool bottle, the metal like emblem on top, and it's got an eagle's head as a as the cork. Wow. So that's a Jewish-owned brand, but that's a source product. So the brand and the owners of the brand don't own any of that chametz over Pesach. They buy it, they source it, they bottle it, and then the distributor buys it.
Oh, wow.
So we actually take care of the chametz for that brand. In case there happens to be overflow in any anything there. There's another brand called Old Haymarket that we take care of as well. But those are both sourced brands. Neither one of those has an actual distillery. So we make sure that what they're buying isn't, you know, from a source that isn't fit. Yeah. And we make sure that the chametz is sold in case they do have any inventory or any chametz.
And for these source brands, you went to the owners and you said, you know, chametz sha'avar lava Pesach is an issue. We can help you with this. How did those conversations go?
So with Lusty Claw, for example, they approached us for certification.
Oh, great.
For the bourbon itself. And that has the class logo, which is here on this bottle. It stands for kosher liquor and spirits. And because we were certifying him, we had to, one of the checkpoints on certification is the owner Jewish and does he take care of the chametz? So that's how that happened. And the Old Haymarket was very similar. It's owned by a good friend of mine, actually. He had a whiskey bar that we took care of the cell for the bar. And then as he transitioned from bar to actually selling, he says, why sell it by the drink if you can sell it by the barrel? So he's transitioned to the other side. And we take care of that for him as well.
That's really nifty. That's great. That's great. Cool. All right. So I want to take a moment. I'm going to take a break from this conversation. So listeners out there, we are about to have Passover. Passover is going to be here. I'm going to take a little bit of a break. The next episode of the Jewish Drinking Show will be coming out April 13th. So we're going to take a couple of week break. That episode will be featuring Rabbi Dan Margulies in our discussion on Maimonides on Kiddush and Havdalah for Shabbat. Here is a sneak peek.
Is the wine actually a biblical requirement like the mitzvah of Kiddush itself to mention Shabbat? Is saying that over a glass of wine part of the biblical mitzvah? The Rambam says no. The Rambam seems to say pretty explicitly that the wine is something the rabbis added onto the biblical requirement to mention Shabbat at the start and the finish. So you could imagine a world where, you know, what if you don't have wine? What if you live in it, you know, you have nothing to say Kiddush over? Well, is there still the mitzvah to mention Shabbat verbally at start and finish as part of Tefillah? We do that. We mention Shabbat in Maariv. We mention Havdalah in Maariv. So in certain respect, you fulfill the mitzvah that way, but then you have this added rabbinic component to do so at the meal with a glass of wine, which totally changes the context. It's no longer a prayer context that you'd be doing in shul with a minyan. It's something you're doing in the home with your family.
All right, now back to our episode with Rabbi Litvin. All right, so Rabbi Litvin, you just showed us a really fascinating bottle, and you also teased us at the very beginning with this bourbon that apparently is your own label. So can you show us, can you tell us, what is this bourbon?
So here we have the Bourbon Rabbi Bourbon. Mm-hmm. This is the first product I put out with my own label on it.
Number one.
Wow. I've done barrel picks before, but this is actually mine. I had this recipe made for me.
Wow.
and we bottled it actually on Monday of this week. So as of the filming of this episode, it's not actually in stores yet. It doesn't go straight to the store. It's not quite as simple as many may think. There's the legalities involved are quite intricate. A distributor has to get it from the distiller or the bottler, and they actually have to hold it overnight. They can't just drop it off.
Oh, wow.
So they need to take it into their facility. They only do drop-offs on certain days in certain locations, so the stores that are getting them have to order it, and then once it gets in their system and it sits overnight, and then they can put it on trucks, and then they can get it out. So eventually it will get to stores. There's a link on my Instagram, on my website, if anybody wants to be notified when it actually does get to stores. Feel free to fill that out at bourbonrabbit.com. And a little bit about it. It's
by the way, I can also link that in the show notes.
Okay, great. Yeah, that'd be good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's a Kentucky bourbon, which means it's distilled here. Straight means it's at least 2 years, mm-hmm. and it's from one distillery, so it's not a blend from a bunch of different places. This is from one distillery. Mm-hmm. Trying to get it close to the camera that it's clear.
Yeah. I can see it. Yeah.
It's this is 2 years and 9 months old. We just put a 2-year statement on it. If it's less than 4 years, little bourbon trivia, label trivia, if it's less than 4 years, you have to write how old it is.
Hmm.
So if you don't see an age statement on it, it means it's at least 4 years old. So this is not quite that old. So we have here the 2-year age statement. And this is a super high proof. We have this at 115 proof, which is 57.5%. 115, as you may know, is the gematria of Chazak. I thought that'd be a great
strong,
a great number to start
it's
with.
It's a strong drink.
It's not just strong, it's get strong, be strengthened.
Ah, nice.
Is Chazak. Chazak, Chazak, Finiska drink is that's a blessing, a power advocating for strength.
Hmm.
Maybe it'll make you stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Maybe. Why did you choose for such a strong? Why 115 proof versus an 80 or a 90?
So it's a good question. I prefer a higher proof. This drinks like a little lower.
It really?
Doesn't have the burn. I know people will say, oh, you're biased. It's yours.
Well, I'm actually surprised because for such a young bourbon that it tastes.
Yeah, so this is actually, this is incredible. It took a long time to figure out exactly the recipe I wanted, the mash I wanted.
Did you design the mash? Did you?
Yes, it's contract distilled.
Oh, really?
Right.
Okay. Are you able to tell us anything about this recipe?
Am I able?
Even in the Vegas terms. How about the Vegas terms?
It's high in corn, and it's a 3-grain, so it has mostly corn, mm-hmm. and it has rye and barley as well.
Okay. Is it fairly high rye or not really?
No, pretty
mellow
rye.
Okay.
Well, it's not super low. There's some that are 4 or 5.
This is 10% rye?
This is about 10 or 11% rye.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very neat. Can you tell us anything about where it was distilled in Kentucky?
On the western coast.
Oh, the coast. All right. Well, cheers to that. L'chaim on your first label. L'chaim on your first label. All right. Do you have other labels in development beyond this first label that you're releasing?
The bigger plan is to have a few more labels.
Oh yeah.
And having the capability to bottle for people if anybody wants to put out their own bourbon, whether it's starting their own brand or you're having a simcha and you want something specialized. So we'll soon be able to do those types of things as well.
So they could reach out to you through bourbonrabbi.com and find out how they could do that?
Yeah, so I've found throughout the years that there's a lot of people, like for example, I mentioned the Lusty Claw before. He approached us, was trying to find someone to bottle for him.
Uh-huh.
He was sourcing the bourbon, trying to find out how to get it bottled, and he was going to do the promotion, and build the brand.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't find the kosher bottler. Oh. So I connected him with the distillery that we deal with, and got them in. But the bourbon industry is still continues to grow. And that bottler has said he can't take any more clients because he has no more capacity. He needs all the space for himself.
That is a good problem to have.
It's a great problem to have, not for Lusty Claw. They need a bottler. So we're in touch with a lot of distilleries, but it gets harder and harder. So and the some of the bigger bottling companies aren't kosher. They'll do other things besides whiskeys. So you know, if they're making, if they're bottling juices that they pasteurize, and they have maybe a grape juice, or if, you know, they have some kind of flavored drink, or whatever the issue may be.
Yeah,
it makes it more complicated. So. That's what we're looking into on the long term.
I know this is such a tangent, but what possibilities are there for other bottling opportunities?
What do you mean?
I mean, it sounds like these other distilleries are kind of at capacity. Are there avenues that new upcoming distilleries could go if they wanted to bottle?
For a private person that wants a bottle or a distillery? I'm just missing.
Another. Yes and yes. Everything.
So a lot of the companies, there's a distillery that that is actually coming kosher real soon called Bardstown Bourbon Company.
Say it again?
Bardstown Bourbon Company. They're on track to be kosher in the very near future. Should be right after Pesach. Everything should be finalized.
Wow.
Not Jewish owned, so we don't have that issue. they've been bottling at a bottling facility for a long time. And part of the reason we aren't rushing the push of, or the finalization of it is because we're waiting for their bottling line to come online. We're having bottling at another facility. That facility isn't kosher. They're building their own. Mm-hmm. And when they have that done, they'll be all in-house and be able to maintain the kosher on their products.
That's wonderful. More kosher certified bourbons is a win-win for everyone.
Definitely.
Any other bourbon, kosher bourbon news on the horizon?
Rabbit Hole Distillery actually is just finalizing their paperwork and getting in line. They should be kosher also in the next couple of weeks.
Are they Jewish owned or just becoming kosher?
They're not Jewish owned. They're just they reached out looking for kosher.
Really? They reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. So a couple new bourbons coming out there that wanting to be kosher certified.
Yes. Yep.
That's great. All right. Win-win for everybody.
Yep.
You know, it's funny because one time I was at a, this has nothing to do with whiskey. I was at a beer festival back in pre-pandemic times. And I was talking with this one brewery that they were kosher certified. And the totally non-Jewish like beer servers were saying, yeah, it's such an excellent marketing opportunity. Right. Which was such a different way of thinking about, like, for the kosher consumers, okay, we're, you know, but for most people out there, they don't think about it in those terms. But that's really great that these distilleries putting out these bourbon products.
Yeah, but it's not just distilleries. It's not just distilleries. So I do a lot of kosher supervision for other items as well, besides the alcohol industry.
Yeah.
I work for the OU, OK, Chafke, Starke. A local rabbi when they're, you know, the land is cheap here. There's a lot of industry. Yeah. So they're not going to fly someone in from New York, you know, every other week.
Right.
But a lot of the department inside these facilities that takes care of this is the marketing department.
Really? In a lot of these things.
Yeah, not just in alcohol. Huh. So it's a really marketing drives it. And then the quality control with the marketing is really who takes care of it in the actual facilities.
Learn something new every day. I'm really fascinated by that. That's great. That is really wonderful. It's good to. It's really great that they have that vision, that they have that understanding to leverage the use of a Hechsher for marketing purposes.
Right.
Yeah. Everybody benefits.
They say it's the new version of the good housekeeping seal of approval.
Yeah, so, yeah it's exactly what it sounds like. It's great. Awesome. All right. So Rabbi Liffen, thank you so much. Before we close off, do you have any other labels under development? Of your own?
Nothing at this time, but we have some great plans coming in the future. Hopefully I'll be back on this great program soon, and we can discuss those then.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you so much, Rabbi Liffen, for gracing our presence and talking about this. And I want to wish everybody L'chaim.
L'chaim.